what we have done with our society is we've told our society and we've told ourselves a certain narrative. We're going to probably teach it to our kids. And hopefully when that child becomes in an age where he's like, you know what, I don't really want to act like this or talk like this or be like this, then they can begin making good decisions. So I tell young people, when you know better, you can do better. And I think that those are just the work. You know, so I think the work we have to do is just keep educating. Frederick Douglass said, it's easier to raise successful children than fix broken men. And that's what I believe in this work about Ever Forward and education, that we got to start young, that there's some adults who are not going to change the way they are. They're going to say the things they say. They're going to talk the way they talk. But we have a younger generation that our responsibility is to help them raise up and help them become more of their true selves.
Hello, everyone. My name is Duncan Autry, and you're listening to Fractal Friends, the podcast where we explore our self-similarity across our diversity. We all have a role to play in the whole, and the purpose of this show is to interview people with interesting perspectives on the world and see what it is that we might learn from one another. In this episode, I talk with Ashanti Branch. Ashanti is the founder and executive director of the Ever Forward Club. Ashanti grew up in Oakland and began his career as an engineer. However, Ashanti found his true life passion and became a teacher in 2004. While teaching at San Lorenzo High School, he created the Ever Forward Club to provide a support group for African American and Latino males who were not achieving at the level of their potential. He also formed this group so that his students could teach him how to be a better teacher. Since then, the Ever Forward Club, Siempre Adelante, has grown to serve both young men and women and become a globally recognized nonprofit organization. The Ever Forward Club has helped 100% of its members graduate high school, and 93% of them have gone on to attend college. Ashanti is now famous for creating a workshop that asks participants to create a mask and write down on the front of it what it is that they show to the world, and on the back, what they hide from the world. The Taking Off the Mask workshop has helped tens of thousands of youth and adults to engage in honest conversations and vulnerable experiences that give them a deeper understanding of themselves and just how much we have in common. And you too can experience the transformative magic of taking off the mask. Ashanti and his team have launched a campaign called 100,000 Masks, which makes the workshop available for educators and facilitators to use all over the world. You can get your masks and more information at 100kmasks.com. In this conversation, we talk about the importance of working with young men and boys to help them navigate the complex and confusing messages that they get from adults that tell them both to be a good man at times and also to be a real man at others. And in the context of this messaging, I want to add a disclaimer here. In this episode, I do use a strong derogatory term about homosexuality. And when you hear it in context, it should be clear that I'm trying to make a point about the painful ways that masculinity is policed in our culture. But it grates even on me to hear me say it. So I just want to give you a heads up and confirm that I absolutely do not condone that kind of language. We talk about the challenges that young people face when they are under pressure to be cool. And we reflect on how, as adults, we also have a similar version of this concept that prevents us from showing up with our authentic selves in relationships, the workplace, and in life. We talk about the transformative potential of creating safe spaces for people to be vulnerable and the power of trusting that they will be their best. And we talk about and actually experience the truth that we are not alone in our vulnerability, that in fact, it is an essential part of being humans in relationship. Thank you so much for listening to Fractal Friends. If you enjoy this show, please subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening to it, and don't hesitate to give it a review. And also, come visit fractalfriends.us to get more information about Ashanti Branch and the Ever Forward Club and the 100,000 Mask Challenge and other links for the things that we discuss in this episode. This episode page in particular is full of great articles and videos that you can learn from and enjoy. Also at fractalfriends.us, you can find information about other guests and episodes that we've recorded from over the years. This conversation was recorded in July of 2019. And now please enjoy this conversation with Ashanti Branch. Well, Ashanti, thank you so much for being here and for talking to me, taking the time.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's really cool to see how much your work is blowing up and to see like how super important it is as well. Those always don't happen at the same time, you know?
Thank you. Yeah. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. Well, I guess just like as a little bit of just an intro, could you just like tell us a little bit about sort of, you know, who you are, what your, you know, what your project is? Tell us about the Ever Forward Club, just a sketch.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, my name is Ashanti Branch. I'm from Oakland, California, born and raised. I was raised by a single mother. My father died before I was born. So I grew up just not even really having a connection to my father, but also even most of my father's side of the family. And I realized that that's been a big part of my life, you know, a big, I say a wound that I'm still working on the healing around that. But grew up in a city of Oakland where, you know, there's some rules about what it means to be a man. And especially growing up as a little black boy in Oakland, you learn quick, or you get taken advantage of, or you get treated poorly. And I began to act in ways that people said you should act to be respected as a real man. And there were different rules in my mom's house and outside of my mom's house, but my mom did the best she could, you know, but she's not a man. Mm-hmm. So how can she teach me to be a man? She can teach me qualities that she likes in men. She can teach me some of those things. She can teach me about what are good qualities of humans, right?
Right.
But a lot of the how was the hardest part.
Totally.
Right? Like, you know, somebody telling you, you know, when I got my first bike taken, I remember her like, you better go get that bike back. And I was like looking at her like, you don't think I tried everything I knew to keep the bike? I didn't give the bike away. It was taken, right? And I think that, you know, the what was go get the bike back, but the how was not involved because I didn't know how to protect myself. I didn't really know how to, fight, you know? I mean, where do you learn that from? I don't know where you normally learn it from. I learned it from people usually out on the streets and on the playground. I learned how to protect myself in those ways like that. And so I usually it was with fists.
Right.
It was definitely not with negotiation or with let's work this out. It was like you either going to stop
right,
or there's going to be an altercation here.
Totally.
And I probably won't even say that many words. It's usually like, I'm going to look at you, and if you don't get the hint, then it's going to be on. And I remember that. I was thinking about that this morning, a fight I had when I was in elementary. Like, I didn't want to fight. I was at the brand. That was my first day at the new school. So I'm going to more story than I.
No, it's good. It's good. Yeah.
I think what I did was I grew up with this idea that in my mom's house, here's what it means to be a man.
Yep.
And out in Oakland, and on my way to school, leaving when everything outside of my mom's house, there were some different rules.
Right.
And I remember that they often didn't match. My mom was like, be nice, be kind, be respectful. Always say please and thank you. You always wait your turn. You like she told me some really great qualities. I'm glad I have, and I love my mom for that. But when you go outside of the house, you go to the playground. Yeah, you're supposed to be nice, but there's only so much niceness people will handle before you're something kind of weird.
Yeah,
there's only so much like kind and gentleness that can be tolerated before you began to be called names.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think my life began to be just a journey of who am I? How do I need to be at home for my mom to be happy? How do I need to be outside of the house so that I stay safe?
Yeah.
And I think that those are the things that I grew up like trying to figure out. And so I'm going to tell you the story briefly so I kind of tell you
how
I got to
Ever
Forward.
Yeah, go ahead.
So middle school was, you know, it was a little messy. I was getting in trouble a lot. I got bullied in middle school, so I really began acting out. And then I would go to high school on track. Luckily, this one teacher saves my life. You know, she says to me in detention one day, she said, life doesn't give you what you want. Life gives you what you get, and you got to make the most out of it. And that sentence changed my life. I heard it. And I don't know if it was the next day or the next week, but I was clear that things are going to change. And teachers were confused. They were like, Ashanti, is everything okay? Like, you're doing work. Like, you're paying attention. Like, and it was never that I couldn't do the work. It was that I had so much stuff in my head. No one ever gave me permission to be sad about my father dying.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, people tried to not talk about it. They just didn't want to talk about it. So I thought I shouldn't talk about it either. But yeah, I was like dealing with it.
Your
so
whole life, even. I mean, since before you were born.
That's right.
Yeah.
I turned it into anger. Because anger was respected as of men in Oakland.
Yeah.
Sadness was not respected. Fear is not respected. Any other emotions outside of funny, angry, or I don't care was not really tolerated by men outside of maybe very tight-knit networks of brotherhoods or something like that. But I knew that it wasn't a permission for me. So that when she gave me that permission, I was like, okay, I have a reason to be sad. Like, thank you. And I think it was just subconsciously I just began to say, okay, so now my job is I am sad about it. I don't need to tell everybody that I'm sad about it, but at least somebody sees it. And now I can make the most out of it. I want to make my father proud. Like the quote I used to say to myself is, I don't know what my father would have wanted me to be, but I'm going to be the best so that if he was here, he would say, or if he's looking down on me, he would say, I'm proud that's my son.
Yeah.
That's the context I held from that time that lady, that teacher, Ms. BP, told me that to the time I finished college. Even to today, I kind of think that deep back in my mind, but that was a sentence that I said to myself that really was like my mantra. Like, now that I think about it, that's what it was. Yeah. I don't even use them today, but I thinking about what a mantra people use, like something that keeps you moving,
mm-hmm.
that's what I used. I don't know what my father would have wanted me to be, but I want to make sure that if he's looking at me, he would be like, I'm proud that's my son.
Yeah.
And that's how I try to pattern my life. And and so that took me from, middle school to high school, focused, like on track, go to college, graduate, come home, make money, making money. Poor boy from Oakland, came back, now I'm making a lot of money. That was beautiful. And then something inside of me said, yeah, you could do this engineering thing, but you're supposed to be a teacher.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what you know about teachers or where in the world you're listening to this podcast, but teachers don't make a lot of money. Yeah. It's not a job you get if you want to be rich.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe if you married somebody rich, you could then get to be a teacher and then you could be like, I'm rich, right? But you don't go to become a teacher to be rich. And I grew up poor. So I was clear that poor, I was done with my poor time.
Yeah.
I was looking for riches and teaching somehow called me.
Yeah. I mean, like moving up, like that's what that looks like, right? That's money in the bank account.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And so that's what happened. And so I became a teacher, started Ever Forward Club that first year teaching. I was struggling. I was doing a bad job. I was every day. I was prepared. I loved math. I loved students. But I had students that were not learning from me. And I was like, what's wrong with me? Maybe once or twice I was like, you don't care about your learning. And I think deep down I didn't believe that. But I think it was something I was like, what am I missing? Because I know the math. I love this job. I ain't here for the money. I'm here because I feel like a passion in my heart is to teach. You know what I'm saying? Like it was I signed up to be financially not feel very successful. I signed up for that piece of it. I didn't sign up to be a failure at my job.
Right. Like at least the success of like teaching some kids some math, right? Or like getting kids caring about their schoolwork or whatever,
right? Yeah. And so that's how Ever Forward started because I was at a loss. I was like, I was going to quit after that first year. I was like, there ain't no way I'm going to be making peanuts here financially, trying to figure out how to pay all my bills every month, and then also doing horrible at it. Now, I don't mind the fact of not doing good at a job and getting better at it. I'm not talking about that. I was like seeing smart young men, smart, like come to my class and do nothing. I'm not an actor. I am an actor a little bit. I'm not going to be like dancing around the room to keep you engaged. Like I will not be doing that, but I will be here 100%. I'll come early. I'll stay late. I got food in my classroom. Like, what do you need? And when I learned from those young men, when I invited them to that lunch, I said, listen, I'll buy you lunch once a week. In exchange for lunch, you teach me how to be a better teacher.
Yeah.
Like, tell me what I'm doing wrong. And that's how Ever Forward Club started. It was that one lunch. It was me asking a whole lot of questions before that, but that lunchtime was a day where I realized that what I needed to do for those young men couldn't happen in the math class only.
Yeah.
It had to be something else that got poured into them to help infuse them with belief and trust and self-awareness that they were important and valuable and meaningful, and that even though in their mind they thought that smart wasn't cool, that they didn't want to be the opposite.
Yeah.
Right? Because on the long-term effects, one of my mentors says something to, he says this, he says, you're going to be older a lot longer than you are younger. But so many young people are basing everything on these few years of their youth.
Yeah.
And they're setting themselves up for a long life of, I'll use the word misery, but unhappiness, unsuccessfulness, whatever, because they let those youth years sabotage the rest of their life.
Whoa, that's deep. Yeah, I remember someone pointing out, like, wow, if you peak in high school, like, you're not really playing the cards very well, right? You know, you don't want to, you know, and it seems like at that point, that's like the most important thing. Yeah, I mean, there's something about this that's like really interesting. So like, as you're like trying to look out there to the world to sort of figure out what it means to be a man, yeah. like, and you're an impressionable young man, boy, like teen, and like, you're just looking around and you're just absorbing all this information, right? So what you are seeing is everyone's exteriors, right? Like, everyone's outsides, their masks, they're showing you their masks. And so you're trying to figure out how to get yourself in alignment with everyone else faking it too, right? That's right. You know, and I don't know. I think it was sociologists started this. I'm not exactly sure, but they were putting out this thing where it's like a little survey. It was like, what does it mean to be a real man, right? Mm-hmm. And we all just know the list. You got to be tough. You can't cry. You know, we just click through those things.
Yeah.
And then if you ask everyone, say, what does it mean to be a good man? Everyone else also knows totally how to answer that question. Mm-hmm. Kind, generous, a provider, caring, you know, like strong and, you know, like that there's a, and that this like, that difference of good man, real man, like becomes like really, it can be really confusing. And it's like, we're giving both of these signals out. And then it's like, and it's, people are missing the fact that like, everyone's out there trying to sort of take in that signal, especially when they're youngins, you know? And, you know, and then what more is like, you're trying to fit in with your peers, you know, and they're also on the mask, which is the mask of the mask they're copying from the other one else. and they also don't know what the heck they're doing still anyways, you know, like they're still haven't really don't have the big perspective of like, wow, learning this right now is going to be super useful when I'm 40.
Yeah.
Cause it's just not really lining up, you know? I think the thing I want to like capture those, like, there's something really profound about how when you brought those students to lunch, like you didn't start with what's going on with y'all. Like, seems like there's some problems here. You started with like vulnerability yourself. You're like, I am not doing it right somehow.
Yeah,
I need help. Right. Yeah. And like by setting up that vulnerability, like you're in a way becoming like a model, and it seems like that's something that's come up a lot in your work, but I'm curious like what your experience is about just like entering with honesty and just being like, look, I'm showing up 100% right now.
Yeah I think one of the things I realized is that before that first lunch, I had tried so many things in my classroom as a teacher. I tried these little activities where I was going to be their coach, and I was, you know, I come from corporate America, so I was like, oh, I'm going to be your success coach. And I gave them these things that they were going to fill out, and I was going to sign them, and we were going to have a compact. We were going to have a contract with each other. Like, I'm going to support you to hit your goals, and you're going to do your part. And I was like, that's hard to do with 150 kids, right? And I was like, I literally had written each of them. I had to go sign all of their contracts because they wrote this thing up. And then I had to, they wrote me a letter, and I wrote them a letter back. After doing that twice, writing over 300 letters back to students, and then thinking I was going to keep that up the whole year, I was like, that's not even possible. That's not even, I would be writing letters all the time and never getting any math stuff done. I mean, I'm doing this on my own time. That's not like class time. They're writing the letters during class, so there's a warm up. I collect them. I go home that night. I'm writing letters back. And I'm not just writing, thank you for your letter. I'm writing like, I'm reading what they wrote. I'm connecting. I'm like, and I realized that I tried so much. And I realized that every student didn't need what I was confused about. There was a lot of them that did, but then mostly the young men, they were missing just a connection. And what when I asked them these questions, there's two questions I asked that really began to resonate with me. What obstacles have you overcome in your life? And what obstacles do you currently face? It was really in the context of this math class, right? Not one student, maybe one. I'm going to say not one. Let's say maybe one. But resonating in my mind that not one of them said, I don't know how to do the math thing in this class. All of them said, I'm dealing with issues with my family, with my friends, with my boyfriend, girlfriend, with my family, my mother. I lost my father. The gangs, the drugs, the everything primarily was about stuff, not academic. And if it wasn't for me remembering deep down that I was that kid in middle school who was dealing with so much stuff that no one could ever see my brilliance in school because I wasn't showing it. Because I was worrying, I was dealing with my own fear and sadness about life and about drama and about all that. And that is when it really kicked me to say, what you need to do is not teach more math. You need to find a way to help these students connect to themselves, back to themselves.
Right.
Who they want to be, who they dream of being, who they aspire to be. And that's how it all happened. That's actually what kicked off Ever Forward Club, because I was like, oh, this is not math related. Yeah. I'm thinking, I'm trying to figure out what I'm doing wrong in the math world. And it was about relationships. It was about connection. And so when I invite those gentlemen to lunch, I had already tried to give more math. I had already tried to set up an after school homework session. I'd already tried to invite them to lunch to come do some more math. It wasn't even any of that. It was like, do you believe in yourself?
Right.
Do you know how valuable you are? Do you know how important you are? And I think for a lot of them who didn't get it, who didn't see it, if no one ever told you that you were valuable and important, maybe some people out there will be like, well, I told myself. So I just, and that's great. But everyone doesn't operate like that. Some people need to hear it from someone on the outside so they can then earn their courage to say, okay.
Yeah, and not just hear it, but experience it.
Experience it.
Right? They actually have to, like, because people might hear, oh, I really care about you, and people, you know, like, all sorts of words. But you have to, like, be able to sit there and be like, and I'm going to take the time to be with you right now.
Yeah.
And I see you, and you know it. You know?
Yeah.
I'm also sort of thinking that there's, like, interesting, there's, like, almost, like, two layers here. So you have these kids, they're like, I don't want to do this math. I don't want to look like I'm a nerd or whatever, you know? Like, and then, you know, and you're offering these letters and these goals and these contracts. Mm-hmm. And we're like, here's, like, the vision. Like, what is your dream? And, like, how can we get you closer to your dream, right? But if someone's not yet in touch with, like, their own self, you know, or even in touch with their own validity, then, like, the dream is, like, it's the next level. So it's like, first you got to get them to sort of be able to, because if you ask someone what their dream is, and they're just, like, struggling just to deal with all this life situation and don't feel like they can feel their feelings, they don't know what their dream is. Hmm. You know, it's not even, you know, like, you don't even, can't even really have a sense of possibility until you can really clear off all that junk, you know? And then, so it seems like, you know, part of it's like, okay, what's in your way? Who are you really? What are you feeling? Let me show that that's valid, you know, with that experience.
Yeah.
And now let's talk about what you want to do with your life. Right. You know, but it seems like you have to, like, peel that back.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And I think one of the things you said about them saying, I'm not gonna be a nerd or whatever. It was believed in that community that smart is not cool.
Right.
And so if you live in a community where smart doesn't equal cool, then and you want to be cool.
Yeah.
That's an important part. If you want to be cool and smart is not equal to cool, then you may fight ever showing people how smart you are.
Mm-hmm.
And so some adults forget that. Some adults will be like, hey, it doesn't matter. Just be smart right now and then you can get it later. Because some adults have forgotten what it was like to feel in middle school, especially if they never experienced that side of the high school world, middle school world, right? So if you were always a cool kid and everyone always wanted to hang out with you and everyone always wanted to be like you, then you don't know what it's like to be striving to be a part of something, right? But for those people who remember what it was like, it's like, or if you were at a school where smart kids were cool, then so you try to strive to be the smart kid, or, you know, the idea of fitting in.
Yeah.
I think it was really powerful. And I think that, you know, one of the things I've learned over this work of education was that, you know, I did a Fulbright Fellowship in India, 2007, and it was phenomenal. And the first day I showed up to the class, the way it works is the students will stand up and greet you. Once they greet you is when you walk in. So students own the classrooms. Teachers don't own the classrooms like in the U.S., right? So you teachers sit in a little conference room where all their desks are. But when you go to your class to teach, you stand at the door. They'll notice that you're arriving. They'll all stand. They'll greet you. Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. And then you say back to them, Sukhi Bhava. And it's kind of like, the teacher has come. Teacher, we're glad you're here to come teach us. And then you say, I'm here to teach. And then they sit down, right? The first day, I walk in. The girl walks over, Parinita. She's a class leader. She says, sir, I have the key for the cabinet, and the cabinet has all their exams and all their stuff and any chalk we need, whatever. And she says, and I also want to introduce you to the class topper. I said, the class what? The class topper. And I'm thinking it's an accent. I don't understand what she's saying. She said the class topper. And I'm like, what is that? And she says, okay, stand up, Suraj. And Suraj stands up. I don't think he even knew how tall he was. He's like 7 feet tall, right? He stands up, and the class erupts in screaming and clapping and banging their desks like he was a rock star.
Wow.
And I'm
and I, like, I literally what is this guy? Yeah.
I was about to run. I'll tell you, I was about to run. Because I'm like, when people start screaming and yelling, my rule is I run first, then I'll look back later, figure out what happened, right? Yeah. I don't want to wait around for it. I'm like, what's going on? What's going on? I really get goosebumps thinking about it. She said, oh, well, the class topper, he got the highest exam on the last math test. And I really like, I almost like, I like stared at her like for maybe too long. Huh? What do you mean?
Yeah, and everyone's so excited for this kid.
Oh my God. Like, he's shy kid. Like, he you can see he was taking it in, but he was kind of like head down, and he didn't want to like make himself look too taller than me. So he kind of like was kind of slouching over a little bit. I'm like, you mean those cheers were for the math test?
Yeah.
I had never seen anything like that in my life. And I was like, oh my gosh. How can I bring this back to California?
Yeah.
How can I bring this back to my classroom where I remember getting the highest score? You know what? Who knew about it? Only me and the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
You know why? Because when I got that test, it went right in my backpack.
Yep.
And people were like, hey, where your test at? I'm like, I don't know. I lost it. Yeah. I don't got it. I don't want to talk about it. I'm pretending. I remember many a test I got back. I was embarrassed that I did so well.
Oof.
Because the people hung around didn't necessarily do so well.
Yeah.
And I was, when I saw that happen, I was like, oh my goodness, this is beautiful. And I say that just to say that the work that we are trying to do is give people power and permission to be great,
mm-hmm.
and to celebrate their greatness in so many different ways, you know. And it's just the journey of education is what I think so many young people don't have an awe of learning.
Right.
Like, I think school and education should be in awe. Like, you should be in awe of, like, oh, man, I learned this today.
Yeah.
But how often kids come home and I think they just don't have anything to talk about what they learn, you know? And I think I know that teaching is hard. But with the world of social media and these devices that have, like, libraries inside of them, you know, that you could get any information you need from a device. And you could actually push a button and ask somebody, hey, what is the capital of this? And you're going to find out in less than 3 seconds.
Yeah.
So with these devices that takes away having to really think about some things so really hard, how do you bring back awe to this learning thing, you know? And that's the work I really wanted to do. Because, you know, this is 2004. I'm a first year. There's no mobile phones.
Mm-hmm,
kids didn't have them in our class, you know? In our school I worked at, they weren't carrying them. Maybe a couple of them had a pager or something, you know?
Right.
But there wasn't that, they weren't walking around with phones, right? And so it's a different day today. And so we have to evolve as an organization as well. And teachers are having to evolve as well, right? How do we learn to help students learn in a way that's going to be beneficial into in the world, you know?
Right.
Collaborating, like.
Totally. Well, and it comes back to that thing you were saying. We're just like, somehow adults have to like imagine, like, what does it mean to be this youth, you know? Yeah, like, to what does it mean to be a teenager?
Yeah.
Right. And there's something about like this, like the disconnect about how like being cool is such, there's so much primacy around that. I mean, it's like the most important, you know, thing. And as an adult, I mean, we can't really remember what that was like, you know, or maybe we can. We have like specific memories, specific traumas, or specific like successes.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's still something I'm noticing, like that I can still notice people kind of downplaying their greatness as adults, you know?
Yeah.
And I also, I mean, I don't know if we call it cool, but there's like a way to be in the workplace, you know, that people are like, you know what? I'm just not going to let everyone see what I'm really feeling about this, you know? Like, and that like seems to cut across, you know? But I mean, you know, like, we're not going to call it cool, because that's a very specific, you know, thing. It is funny though that like it's so much in our culture, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and there's a certain way that, like, because advertisers are like, well, primacy of teenagers, they're the ones who are going to give us the money. You know what I mean? And they're like, mm-hmm. the ones who we can manipulate easily. So making things look cool, like, goes all the way across our life, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you need these sunglasses. I mean, you get to be an adult, you're like, you know, where's my car from? Where's my like Rolex from? You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. you know, and that, but we have a kind of a name for it, but it does seem to be like, how do we let this concept that, you know, that not really based in anything become so important, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm curious, because I know that, because one of the first time I experienced your Taking Off the Mask workshop, yeah. I was at the Culture Conference, which is amazing conference done by Jenny Sauer Klein. Amazing. And it's all these people who are like, you know, executives or C-suite people, like really high level people of all these different kinds of businesses, like huge businesses or small ones. And so these people are the, you know, top of their field, killing it. And we go into this workshop and you're have us, you know, do this, we make a mask, a piece of paper, it's a mask, yeah. and on the draw a face, and on the front of it we put all the things we show to each other, and on the back of it we write all the things that we don't show to the rest of the world.
Yeah.
And I love the next step where we like crumple them in a ball and then we have like a snowball fight with the pieces of paper. It kind of just gets all that energy out. And then we like pick up this random piece of paper crumpled up at our feet and we read it.
Yeah.
And it's someone else's piece of paper, but it says the same things that were on mine.
Yeah.
Right. And wait a minute, you're keeping these things a secret. And I'm keeping these things a secret. And it's like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
I think I learned at that workshop with like, man, the stuff that we like hide from each other is the stuff we actually have in common.
Yeah.
Like, that's so interesting. Like, it's like, wow, why? Like, wait, you have body image issues? I have body image issues. You know, like, wait, you don't feel good enough? I don't feel good. Wait, why did we not tell each other that? You know, but like, that's all the stuff that's a secret is the stuff that's there. But it was really powerful to just see this is like, we can come back to like how important it is to work with boys right now. But it is a human experience.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that first Culture Conference, and that was an amazing conference. And I knew Jenny before I became a social entrepreneur. I was a teacher.
Right.
I was taking some kids to the yoga conference in San Francisco. And I met her there doing acro yoga. And just like made a connection there. And then we just stayed in touch because, you know, we were trying to help these young people and young men. They don't go to yoga conferences, right? Like, you know what I'm saying? It was like, what are we doing here, right? But it was beautiful. And she just really kind of really embraced them. And I really felt that. And so being in that room with those folks from all over, the only way I could get people, adults, especially adults, because adults are a little resistant. They get a guarded. They practice a lot more years of putting up their guard up, right?
Yeah.
Teenagers, my role in creating a space for people to open up is first, I got to do it.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing I did with those young men in Everforward that first day. Until you mentioned that I had to be vulnerable first, I was like, did I? But by saying that I needed them to teach me was, I think as a teacher, one of the most vulnerable things that you could probably be more vulnerable, but that's pretty vulnerable for a teacher to say, I need you to teach me.
Because right.
I've done everything I can possibly do. And I didn't even think of it that way until you mentioned it. But it's actually quite, I mean, I'm going to process that later today as well. I was just trying to be real. And I think being real is more of that, but unintentionally, but in the sense of that room, these adults who are high in their careers of different places, how could I be able to say, hey, how would you tell me everything you don't tell people? Walk in and do that. The only way I could do that is by first saying, hey, let me just tell you who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And tell you that I'm not here because I read some books or because I think I know something. I'm here because I've been on a journey of trying to help people be more their true selves. And if you don't have a place where you can be more your true self, where you can talk about the stuff that's going on in your life, good or bad, do you get a place that you can celebrate your wins? Where who gets a place where they can go and be like, I got a win today. Can I tell everybody about it? And no one's looking bad at you like, look at you bragging, or look at, like, that is needed.
Right.
It's needed a place to talk about when things are not going good. But some people don't have a place for either.
Right.
They can't brag about their wins. They can't talk about their failures. So they basically just walk around carrying all this stuff inside, and they're miserable. I think a lot of people are miserable.
Yeah.
And maybe they're not miserable. Maybe they've learned to deal with it, so they're fine. I'm good. I'm okay.
Yeah. Just keep on following the line. Do what you need to do. Okay. Yeah. Because there's so many different ways to go with this. Yeah. But recently, in like partnering up with a colleague of mine named Ala Weinberg, and we're starting a business where we're trying to work with businesses to help them create cultures where it's safe to be a human, right? Because what we keep on running up into is if you have people that don't feel like they can say, I don't like what we're doing right now, or if they don't feel like they can talk about their wins, right, or they don't feel like they can talk about what they're sad about, they can't talk about what's going on in their personal life.
Yeah.
Not only is it going to interfere with just like them appreciating their job, showing up, it's going to get in the way of relationships.
That's right.
But also, like, the world's changing fast, you know, and if you want people to be agile and like ready to like come up with new ideas, and then you have to be able to know that they can take a risk.
That's
to
right.
be able to say, hey, you know what? I just had this idea. I think we should try this new thing, but I don't want to get teased. But also what I'm hearing is like we're getting under the surface.
Hi, Fractal friends. Sorry for the interruption. If you're enjoying this episode, I really do hope that you will subscribe to the podcast and make sure you share it with some friends. And also, don't forget to visit fractalfriends.us to get more information and sign up for my newsletter. You know, I don't just host this podcast. I also work as a conflict transformation catalyst and educator. And my most recent project, I'm teaming up with a colleague, and we're going to take these transformation skills into the workplace. We are calling our business Spoke and Wheel. Do you have a workplace? Are you part of a team? Have you ever struggled with a big change? Have you wondered if everyone on your team is moving in the same direction? Do you wish that communication was easier sometimes? Would you like to be able to bring your authentic self to work every day? I'd like you to imagine a world where you have clarity and voice about how your work serves a life-affirming purpose. Imagine trusting that your colleagues are not only working with you for that cause, but that you are connected with them in a web of mutual support. At Spoken Wheel, we are offering virtual team coaching programs that can be completed over an extended period of time. By working over a number of months, these programs allow you the time to form healthy relationships and really get started in creating remarkable things together. We offer programs that support teams through transformation and transition, discovering and defining a shared purpose, and deepening personal and professional connection. We also can design a custom program just for you. You can learn more about our work at spokeandwheel.co. Thank you for listening, and now back to the show.
But also what I'm hearing is like we're getting under the surface. In conflict resolution, we have to talk about this thing called the iceberg model. Above the tip of the iceberg is like everyone's just like, this is what I'm angry about and blah, blah, blah. They're fighting about some issue, right?
Yep, yep.
But if you want to figure out how to resolve the situation, you have to find out what's going on under the issue, right? Because
right,
if you have someone like under the surface, there's actually more under the surface than there is above the surface.
Absolutely.
So, right, you're getting someone to sort of share, like, this is what I'm really believing in, this is what I care about, or what, I mean, even first, it's like, can you just like admit that these are your feelings and that's okay to have those feelings?
Yeah.
But then that seems to be the access point to like what you're really inspired about,
yeah,
right? Because it seems like the next step is like, how can you get people to be like, hey, you know what? This is what I'm passionate about. I'm going to follow my passion. Or to get someone to say, you know what? This isn't working for me and I'm drawing the line. You know, like that, they're like really getting real and actually acting on this secret inner self they have.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it sounds like that's kind of part of like, well, you're all growing a little bit too, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that part of it when we talk about the mask is I don't tell people write your secrets. What I say to them, I really want to be really conscious that even though the tool is anonymous,
yeah,
if they're whatever you're willing to share, what is it that you feel comfortable writing on this card right now? Right?
Yeah.
And usually when we do it, I don't tell people what's happening next. I don't tell them that they're gonna ball them up and throw them at each other and find a random one. I just want them to see how much they have, how much, based on what I've told them so far, how much trust I've earned, that they're just going to follow the process and hopefully they're going to, on the other side, come out of it okay, right?
Right.
And I think that every once in a while, somebody will be like, what am I going to do with these? And I'm like, oh, goodness. So now I got to try and answer this without answering it, without having people freak out. Well, we're going to find a way to make sure that your car stays anonymous.
Yeah.
Right? And so we're trying to explain to the group without telling them the next sequence of steps. Some people are like, am I going to have to read this? I'm like, you will not have to read it because they won't. Right. And so I think it's like, how do you help people like who are asking questions because of fear? And rightfully so. I'm not even against when people ask those questions.
Right.
I'm trying to just not let them ask so many questions that they talk themselves out of doing, because it means that I think I want to write something, but I'm not sure if I can write it because I'm afraid about what's going to happen next. Right.
Right.
It's OK. And I've done workshops for thousands of people. And when I get the question, I'm like, okay, how do I answer this carefully with truth, but also without not like making people go to freak out? So every once in a while, somebody will ask and I'll say, we're going to mix them up and then we're going to like to do a next step. And then you see people go back and they start scratching stuff out. And because in their minds, they think that even though it's anonymous, that somebody's going to know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then what happens is when we get to the place of starting to read them out, they realize, and we've had a couple people who were like, you know, actually, when I knew that we were going to share them, I went and scratched some things out, but I could have shared it but I was afraid. I was worried. I was all the stuff that comes up for adults too.
Yeah.
So imagine teenagers, right? Adults do it so well, even though they got a job and they got a career and they got a whatever. It's like the idea of fear of like connecting. And I think that it's okay. But I'm also in the way of like, how do you give them that space to say, you're not alone.
Yeah.
And some people will get a car that's way more than what they would have written, or they're like, you know what? Actually, I realized I could have wrote something more.
Mm-hmm.
One man that I remember said, I wasn't sure what we were going to do, but I put a filter on that back. He said, but now looking at this card I got in front of me, he says, I could have gone deeper.
Yeah.
So I wish I had gone deeper. And I think that the idea that him saying, I wish I had gone deeper, was a way for him recognizing that his fear of connecting, his fear of letting go of the mask and taking it off a little bit more, was based on what he thought was going to happen out of it, you know? And so I think that most people are in that same category. We meet people, we meet their mask, and with teachers and educators and parents, and I say, you know, if you don't recognize your own mask, then when your kid tells you, oh, my day was great, and you start telling your friends how your kid's doing, you say, oh, they're doing great, because you tell them what based on they told you, because
mm-hmm.
you're not going past what the words say.
Yeah.
And every student who's joined Ever 4, they always knew. If Ashanti's, if they call me Branch. If Branch asks you how you doing and you say fine, wait, get ready for three more questions. If you say good, get ready for like three more. Like, it was always like the answer doesn't matter. Tell me what that answer means.
Yeah.
I'm doing cool. What's cool? I'm fine. What's fine?
Because
mm-hmm. fine for you is different than fine for me. What's cool for you is different for me. What's good for you is different than what's good for me. So let me, like, when I'm asking you, I'm really asking you to tell me some words that are not just the easy answer. Because most times, it's all people have time for. How you doing today? Good. How was your weekend? Great.
Right. And people, and that comes to like actually showing you actually care too, which, you know, we ask that because that's just our natural common greeting in our country. That's you right. know, and we don't. No one's actually asking and no one's actually giving an answer, right? What's up? Great. Cool.
Yep.
Well, this part with the parents is interesting to me. So I've been thinking about, like, and your story is a great example of this. Let's say we're like, you know, we're looking at some teenager, some adolescent, and you're like, wow, I really want to make sure that they feel safe to tell their truth, right? Mm-hmm. And let's say I recognize that, but as a father, I've never felt safe to tell my truth, right? I grew up in that generation, and the generation before didn't feel safe, and I don't feel safe in my workplace, my colleagues, my friends will tease me, right? Mm-hmm. And so then it's like, what advice do you have for parents that are trying to get people to sort of be vulnerable past their mask when they really haven't even figured out how to do it for themselves? And I used to wonder, do you do this workshop with parents sometimes?
Yeah, a lot of schools invite us in to do parent education nights and things like that. And that's a great question. And when we talk to the parents about that, we actually take the parents through this activity and we encourage them to do it with their students, their youth, right? Because even though with a family, it's going to be less anonymous, right?
Yeah.
But it's also about, can we get real as a family? Mm-hmm. Can we talk about what's really going on? I had one young man, a parent reached out to me. Her son was going through some challenges and at school. And I said, well, you know, maybe he can like take on this initiative of like helping make masks at his school as a be a part of this movement that we're doing. And so I sent them the files and then they did it with their family. And then we met up and the mom was like, I didn't even know some of these things about my own kids.
Yeah.
And I think that it was really powerful for me as a practitioner in this work. She did, you know, the five of them, they brought their mask, the whole family's mask. And I was like, thank you for sharing them. Thank you for sharing that. Because I think that sometimes we just don't ask.
Yeah.
We don't, and we ask how you're doing, and then we leave it at that. Because good is good, and fine is fine, and okay is okay. So we keep moving. Mm-hmm. And when often do we say, well, what does that mean? Tell me more.
Right.
And I think that oftentimes with parents, they're doing the best they can. You know, some of them are just working as hard as they can and trying to keep it all together. I had a single mother. She was doing the best she could. I had a lot of responsibility on my back. But you know, and I know my mom loved me. But when I was getting bullied in middle school, I didn't tell her.
Mm-hmm.
She found out on accident. She found out, but it wasn't because I told her, and I tried to keep it from her as long as I could. But I was coming home hungry like a ravenous wolf. I was eating up a bunch of stuff. She's like, she came home and I was making 3 peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. She's like, what are you doing? Why are you making 3 sandwiches? Oh, I'm trying to tell you it was for lunch tomorrow. Should I tell her it was for, so I'm just hungry. Like, what? Why would I be making 3 sandwiches? Well, I was starving. I didn't eat lunch that day, right? Because the dude took my money. And I remember just that moment of like, okay, she's going to find out if I'm lying. I'm trying to lie. I'm really trying to lie. But I can't get the lie out fast enough because I didn't expect her to be home this early. And I thought I was going to have the sandwiches already eaten before she, you know, it's like, well, and it all unraveled, right? I could have just been like, nothing. I mean, but that's not, my mom doesn't tolerate kind of an answer like that, right?
Yeah, right.
So she's going to dig in and it's going to just make it. And that's when she found out. But I didn't tell her, not because I didn't think she didn't love me, didn't care, wouldn't want to support me. But part of it was like I was embarrassed.
Mm-hmm.
How dare you be the man of the house and let somebody take your lunch money?
Right.
How dare you let somebody take something from you that's yours? Like how, like, because in her mind, I felt shame.
Yeah.
I felt fear. And I think that for me, it was just more of me trying to protect myself, protect my own ego, and protect my own relationship with her, you know, as the man of the house, right? And I didn't have the answers. I didn't know what to do. I was afraid of this guy. Mm-hmm. He was bigger than me. He was he was less well put together in terms of his emotional maturity than me. And I was just afraid. I mean, it was just fear. It was nothing but fear. But I realized in that exchange that parents sometimes don't know because they don't ask.
Yeah.
And their kids are good at hiding it. Their kids are going to keep hiding it. And I think that it's really about us recognizing that some of our kids are dealing with stuff that we never dealt with.
We never
dealt with. When I grew up, if there was a party on Friday, I didn't get invited. You know what I found out? Monday morning. Because everyone's talking about it at school. Okay. Now, it's Friday night. I'm watching people dancing on my phone at the party that I'm not invited to.
Oof.
So now I got to make up a story in my mind why I'm not invited, because all my friends are there, and I'm going to make up a story. And on Monday, I'm going to verify that story. No matter what they tell me about why I didn't get invited or what they say, whatever story I made up, I'm going to make it real.
Right. And parent asks their kid on Saturday, like, how's it going? I'm like, fine.
Fine.
Yeah. And
or they're grumpy, and the parents are like, don't be talking to me like that. Because they're not asking what's behind what I'm seeing. They're seeing something. They're feeling something. But they're like, go do the chores. Go do your homework. Go do this. Let's go to this thing for family, blah, blah, blah. And the kid is like brewing.
Mm-hmm.
But if the kid doesn't think their parents are going to understand, parents, I've heard parents say, just get over it. Don't worry about those friends.
Yeah.
Because if you've forgotten what it's like to have friends betray you or feel left out, if you've forgotten, it's easy to be like, just get over it.
Yeah.
Because it's an easy statement, but it's hard to do.
Yeah, it just feels like it's not just asking, but it's actually being like, I want you to know that you, like, I care, and I'm going to demonstrate that. You know, again, it's like what we were saying before.
Yeah.
I saw that you gathered some masks.
Yeah.
And again, so these are part of the 10,000 masks project.
100,000.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm selling it. We're taking all the zeros off. My bad.
yeah, we already had 37,000. So yeah. We've already hit 10,000. Now we're heading towards 50, and then 100 will be happening. My vision is in the next year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was it? I'm trying to think why 10,000 was the. Well, I know in Chinese 10,000 means infinity. So, you know, so anyways,
that's awesome.
Yeah, you're 3 times infinity already. So, yeah. So, but part of what you're doing is like you're having these people make postcards, right? Yeah. Tell us what this project is. Yeah.
So this is the 100,000 Masks Challenge. Originally started with me when we got featured in the documentary, The Mask You Live In. There was a group of young men who I knew were really dealing with stuff, but in front of each other in our circles, they never talked about it. And the film crew said, well, at least we can watch them resisting the opportunity to connect when they have the opportunity. I'm like, well, I'm glad you want to see resistance. And but in my mind, I was like, you can't film me doing that. You can't film me with these young men just lying to each other. And so I was like, how can I think of an activity that they could do without having to talk about it? And that's what you experienced with, was with the pieces of paper.
Right.
It was like, we ball it up. It's anonymous. You throw it around. You get a piece of paper that's not yours. You open it up. You're like, wow. Or you're like, man. Or you're like, I never would have known. Or you're like, eh. Mm-hmm. Whatever you say, it doesn't matter. It's the fact that there's somebody being real on this piece of paper.
Do you know how you came up with the idea? Was it just like, was it because the film crew's there and you just got to like do something or like?
Well, I was planning it a couple of days in advance, but I was like, what am I going to do with them? Because every time we had a meeting, everything I had tried with them didn't work.
Right.
Because I was a dean that year, so I knew what they were going through and when they were one-on-one in my office.
Right.
Because I don't ask simple questions, and I don't, you can't give me a simple answer.
So in privacy, they're telling you they're
true. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I knew what was up. But in circle, my job is to hold space. My job is not to reveal their stuff. They got to reveal their own stuff.
Right.
So even me watching them just kind of lie to each other, it was hilarious in a not funny way, but a more like, they're just sitting here lying to each other. Like they're... Like, you know, one young man, one day, I remember he checked in. He got 5 referrals that day. I was just like, you know what? How do you get kicked out of 5 classes? Like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, literally, 5. Like, he was just melting down. I said, listen, don't get another referral today. What's going on with you? Like, what's happening? Man, I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it. Like, he was going through it. 5. So he gets into the meeting that day. He checks in. I'm a 10. On a scale from 1 to 10. 1 is the worst, 10 is the best. I'm a 10. And I look at him, like, side eye, like, you did not just say you're a 10.
Right.
You got kicked out of 5 classes today. I would hate to see what happens at 5 if you were 5.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And I think that what it was that, but my job is a whole space, so I don't can't say nothing. I got to bite my tongue, and I just got to watch it happen. And I got to try and ask good questions so they feed out other things. But when I knew that they were going to be filming, I said, well, look, we got to try something. I'm going to try it. I said, it can't hurt. So we just said, are we going to write it? Then I'm going to have to talk about it. I don't want you to talk about it. Just write it.
Yeah.
And I think that getting them to put it on paper made it a little bit easier for them because they didn't have to say it.
Yeah.
And some of them, just the things they're going through, they just can't say it. They just can't talk about it.
Yeah.
And so what we know is that what we created then, which is a piece of paper front and back, we've now created on this card. And this card came out of me trying to just figure out how actually, the story of how the cards came about was I got an email from somebody after the documentary came out, and I'm trying to find that email. And the teacher was like, your activity makes the class unsafe. I'm like, activity? What activity are you talking about? I didn't teach nobody to do no activity.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't make no class unsafe. And the teacher was like, I did the thing you did in the documentary, and it made my class really unsafe. And I said, I'm hoping you didn't watch that 3 minutes and think that you were going to regurgitate that in front of your class and not really be thoughtful about how that was going to happen.
Right.
Like you, and how do you blame me? Right. So I was more like irritated that they were blaming me. But what I did is I said, you know what? Here's how we're going to fix that. We're going to give it away.
Right.
With the instructions. And if you do it wrong, it's on you because you're not going to blame me for this 3 minute thing that you, I've been working with those young men for 5 months.
Right.
We were in the room for an hour and a half. They just found a 3 minute clip that could work, right? Like, that's your fault, technically.
Totally.
But ultimately, when you get an email from somebody from somewhere around the country who's saying it's your fault, you can either just be like, I can ignore you, or I can say, maybe other people are blaming me in silence.
Yeah. There's like this thing about like wanting to like make, I always think about like a chicken pot pie, right? And I'm like, I know that has carrots in it and chicken. And like, what if I just took all of those ingredients and just put them into a pot? And it would be disgusting, right? You know, like, and then, but if you're like, no, you actually have to follow a recipe, you didn't get the recipe, you know, like, and so you're giving people the recipe so they can do it. And if they don't follow the recipe, then that's on them.
That's on you.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was like, okay. And then it came out when I was going to create this. I said, well, let's make a goal. Set a goal. We're going to do it. They're going to use it. They're going to make the activity. We're going to give them back to us. So that's when we started setting the goal for what it was. But we created this card, and These just came in the mail recently. These are like individual cards. They're not from a specific place, but there's some younger folks. I think they're probably like a fourth grade class or fifth grade class. And it's just beautiful. It's if you think about the front of the mask or the things that we gladly let the world see about us, the front. I'll let you hold a few just so you can look at a couple. And then you think of the back of the mask or the things that we normally don't let people see.
Yeah.
That's what these are. And so how about we'll just read one each?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So one, this is the front of the mask says nice, happy, funny. And the back of the mask, the things they don't let people see, says sad, pressure. It says lonely. And then next to the word lonely says, I don't know if I spelled that right.
Oh.
It says pressure and then loco, L-O-C-O. That's a young man, 11 years old.
Yeah, this person with, they didn't say their gender, an 11-year-old. And the front of the mask kind of looks like a little Deadpool character with a top hat. And on the front of their mask, they show the world that they are funny, that they are a gamer, that they are normal, and more. And on the back of the mask, they say that they're sometimes mad, sad. It's a hyphenated word there. They want to be better, sometimes scared or in pain, and more.
This student on the front said friendly, funny, and happy. And that's the thing they let people see about them. And on the back, they said, I don't let people see if I'm sad, if I'm really mad, if I'm embarrassed, or if I'm feel left out.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a 10-year-old female student.
Yeah, I also have a 10-year-old female student here. And on the front, she says, I am confident, I am strong, I am funny. And on the back, she says, I can be unsure about how people judge me. I can be timid or afraid. I can feel like I'm nothing or not important when people tease me.
Yeah. And these are young people, right? Mm-hmm. And we see the same stuff happen. I mean, these young people have some really great words that they're using. Some really, I think they're maybe using some vocabulary words they're working on, but it's beautiful that they're speaking about their own selves in that way. And what we know is that they're not alone. And our goal of this campaign is helping people recognize all over the world, you're not alone.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the pieces that we're trying to build out. Like, you know, we got these cards. This requires people to actually mail them back to us. And so the next phase is like, how do we build out this app, this digital tool that people can use so that educators and teachers and communities and businesses can be like, let's go in and do this tool, this task together. You're going to do it on your own by yourself. And then we're just going to look at some of the words and look at some of the things. And I think it's really giving people a space to recognize that I am not by myself in this. I'm not, you know, I think that what we've seen with most people who go through the activity together, these are just mailed in. So we don't know who these people are at all. But when we do a workshop and we do this activity, there's always students who come up in the end and say, I'm so glad you did this. I'm so glad you did this. And some students, you know, they'll stand up in the workshop and say, I wish I knew whose card I was holding so I could help.
Mm.
Right? And I think the idea is that sometimes people think that no one wants to help because we're all been taught that we can't talk about what we're feeling. And so therefore, who breaks the cycle?
Yeah.
And so our work is saying, how can we begin to, in as much piece as we can, a small piece with this tool that we created, three steps.
Yeah.
How can we try breaking the cycle of young people who feel like they're by themselves?
Yeah.
And that's our work.
Do you know the folks over at Soul Shop?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, Vicky.
Yeah, totally.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I was at this workshop that Vicky was doing. And she, well, I'm not going to explain the workshop, but I'm just going to digress too much. But she told us this story that was so powerful. And Soul Shop works with bullies and, you know, helps schools handle bullying. So principal calls up Soul Shop and they're like, we have this little 10-year-old girl terrorizing the school. And like, okay, so 10-year-old terrorist girl, like, okay, well, let's go see what's going on, right? So they go to the school. I mean, it's intense, right? To be like, you know, to really be blaming young girls for like this huge school being terrorized. Yeah. So they have an assembly. Everyone's there in the same assembly. And she, Vicky's like, okay, so sometimes, you know, in life, like we do things that hurt each other. Mm-hmm. How many of you have been hurt by the actions of another person? And all the hands go up. And then they say, how many of you have done something that hurt another person? Mm. I'm going to have no hands go up. And then like in the back, this one girl starts raising her hand. She's like, okay, that's our girl, right? She asks her to come on down to the front and asks her to tell us about her life. And she tells this, she's like, my best friend died. And everyone's like, what were you talking about? Like, who died? And she's like, my grandmother was like my absolutely best friend. And she died and my parents can't handle it. And yeah, I don't have anyone to talk to. So Vicky's like, who here would be willing to be someone that she can talk to? And like a bunch of hands go up, right?
Yeah.
And so she's like, why don't you pick some of these people who you can like go talk to, you know, about your grandma, about your best friend. And so she has now these people who are willing to like hear this story so she can like have an outlet for like whatever she's going through.
Yeah.
And they call up the school like a bit later and they're like, she is now holding circles for people to come talk about things that they're afraid to talk about. Because like after she got helped by everyone and she heard her story, like then... Now she become the person and she's teaching other people how to hold space for other people.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like so touching to imagine like, you know, the people who are out there who are just like acting out in ways that are so painful and hurting other people. Like, what if we could actually remember, wow, there's a hurt person in there, yeah. Right? Like there's like, cause that's the only way that happens.
Yeah. There's this book and I don't remember the author. It's called, The Boy Who Was Raised as a Dog, and it talks about trauma and trauma that shows up in youth and students and how often we take that behavior of what they're doing and we say, what's wrong with you? As opposed to saying, what happened to you? And how the small change in language helps young people recognize that there's nothing wrong with you, that you are doing probably the best you can with what you got. And the more that we can help educators, parents, community, police, politicians, everybody to recognize that we're all going through stuff. And how do we begin to begin breaking down the walls of making it like of not seeing each other more than just for the, I think there's some horrible actions that are happening by people out there. I mean, I've made some stupid moves in my life. And I look back and I'm like, what was I thinking? Like, I was thinking that it was a good idea in the moment, right? Like, just the idea that not doing the best I can with what I got. And sometimes, like, 5 minutes later, you're like, that probably wasn't a good move. That, I probably didn't think that went out really well. And I think that having the spaces, like what they did at Soul Shop and what we try and do with young people is to say, look, the more real we can get in this conversation, the more real we can get in this space, all I'm asking you to do is do your best. Whatever your best looks like, that's what all I'm asking for. And if I just can hold the space for them to like wait for that to happen, it's so powerful, you know? Thinking about, you know, the idea of young people in a workshop, there was a workshop happened at a high school and, you know, it's 150, maybe close to 200 kids. I'm trying to get them to do this one last activity so I can get them to pair up with each other. I got a couple of young men in the back who are kind of like confused about who's going to be whose partner. And I'm like, hey, can you just partner with him and just move over there? And I don't think he hears me. So I go, you know, up the aisle and the other kids are getting their pairs together and it's not working. But there's only one group in the back that are kind of not getting it together. So I said, hey, who's whose partner? I'm his partner, but he's behind you. I said, well, why don't you go around and go back here? And he just kind of nods at me and shakes his head. Yes. I'm like, but I want you to like come out of your seat and come around here and sit next to him. He's like, and I'm like, I thought he didn't understand me. To tell you the truth, I thought he's a Latino young man. I thought maybe he did not understand me. And as a teacher for 11 years, as an administrator for 3 years, I speak Spanish. My mind said, I got 170 kids. I'm trying to communicate this to this one young man. Maybe he doesn't understand me, and I'm trying to just, in my mind, help. So I said to him in Spanish, hey, move to siento allá. And he looked at me, and he said, I speak English. And he was he felt hurt that I was assuming that he didn't speak English. And part of my ego got engaged right. for a second because I'm like, well, I said it like four times in English. Why don't you just move? Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah. what the?
But,
yeah.
but I knew that that wasn't even a part of it. Regardless of what I thought, it didn't matter if he reacted that way. So my job was to say, you know what? My bad. Let me just go. Can you just move over here, please? Can I get a help from another teacher to help me? Can you get them partnered up? I got to go back to the front. I don't have. And so part of me is like, okay, so I said my bad. That's not really an apology, but I said it. And that's teenager language for my apology. Right. So I go back to the front. We do the 2-minute activity, blah, blah, blah. And something in my soul is just not right because I offended him unintentionally. And I offended him in some way that I really felt. And so I went back to the front. I said, so thank you all for participating in that part. You know, I really appreciate it. Before we move on, I need to do something. I said to the young man in the back, I said, my young brother right here, I said, you know, I want to make this a public apology to you. I said, you know, I told everyone what happened. I said, you know, I went back there. I asked him, I spoke in Spanish to him, and he, you know, he responded back like maybe I had insulted him, and that was not my intent. I said, I apologize if you feel like I was insulting you. I was trying to just get... I'm moving fast. You know, I'm like, I said, I apologize. And I said, you know, part of me, you know, as I'm looking, reflecting on that thing, like part of me is like, you heard me. So you should have just did what I said to do. That's the teacher ego in me. And then the human in me says, I needed to try and make an example for everybody to say, sometimes we offend, we hurt people, and we don't even know we're doing it. And when we learn that we're doing it, it's our job to make it better.
Yeah.
It's our job. A responsibility, I think, and everyone doesn't take that personal responsibility to try and make it better after they've offended someone. Well, I didn't intend to offend you, so that's on you. And my belief is that my job is if unintentionally sometime it happens, I'm gonna do my best to make it better, yeah. make it right. And so, you know, just like I think they say hurt people, yeah.
Yep.
And if you don't know that you're hurting people, maybe you do know, maybe you don't even know, maybe you're trying to. Do something else and it hurts, right? Like, I think it's just like, how do we just begin to be more caring and thoughtful so that we can create a world that we all want to live in and we all feel safe and respected and taken care of? That's our work.
That's the work.
That's the work.
Yeah. We're all here.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. We're talking a lot about getting people to really show up and be honest with what's going on for them.
Yeah.
Obviously, we talk about this is important for everyone. We've seen these cards from these girls that are like needing to do that. And we know that adults need to do this. But when, you know, like we started at the very beginning, there's these messages about how to be a real man. And this lesson that boys are learning, which is don't show your emotions, don't cry, don't have feelings, whatever, different variations of that. And actually, you know, don't be a girl or don't be a faggot, you know, whatever. Just like some sort of message that's like, if you are actually caring, then you're doing it wrong, right? Mm-hmm. And... I saw this article in the New York Times recently and I like got my attention. It says like, there's many ways to be a girl, but there's one way to be a boy. And they just did a study of like children, like all around the United States, thousands of kids. And it's just like, they're talking about how, and actually even especially since the Me Too movement, the girls, but just, you know, the women, girls empowerment stuff is happening so much. And so you ask these girls, like, what's the most important thing? I need to be strong and all, and I need to be a leader and I need to be confident. And this is like, what's important? And yet, of course, there's girls are still running up against, and they have to be pretty, right? Like that seems to be like this thing that's stuck there and actually tends to be what's being judged from the outside. Mm-hmm. Boys are just the same things I was just saying, right? That boys are just like still like, I have to be a man. I have to like do all these things. I have to be tough. I can't be. They're just still stuck. Like they're not really getting this message of like, you can be anyone. You can, and they definitely aren't getting the message that they can have feelings. They don't get the message that they can be artistic. And was so interesting. It's like, read the whole article, and the article is just like really talking about all the amazing progress that are happening for girls. And it's kind of the very end, they're like, and apparently boys don't get to do all these things, you know? And mm-hmm. So I'm just curious if you just talk a little bit about sort of what you're seeing as like this message that like, I don't know, sort of like, why is it so important to get boys to see that, to have safe spaces to share their feelings? And what do you see as like a way to cut through this like cultural thing, you know, that's in the way of that?
That's a great question. I think the best way I can begin to, it's a very deep question. And I think that what I try and do with our work around giving young men and boys the space is to tell them that you're human.
Mm-hmm.
And that emotions are humans' way of connecting. And when you were born, there society put a label on you based on your gender, based on what you're born as, like what body you were born into. And they said, well, here are the ways that this body type should act. And imagine if it was hundreds of years ago, there was roles to play in the community, the village. This is what these people did. The men did this. The women did this. The kids hanging around there. The grandparents did these. There were roles to play. And it was about protection. It was about family. It was about how do we survive? Who's going to go get the food? Who's going to cook it? Who's going to prepare it? Who's going to farm? Who's going to, all the roles were covered. And I think that when society got more sophisticated, it gave room for people to be able to do other things. The women didn't have to stay there with the kids all day and do, like, there was just a growth. And I think it's just like thinking about that. And I think what I try to help young men, definitely boys, when we do work with like fourth and fifth grade, even some middle schoolers who are really young, who are still on their young side, anytime you see them trying to show an emotion, they're fighting it. Oh my goodness. They're like wiping their eyeballs. They're trying to like, you just see them like they're pinching themselves. Like they're trying not to show because there's a rule, some rules. And I'm so glad when I get to have spaces with young men by themselves so that they can, I can just tell them it's good. Like, it's mm-hmm. here, you're safe here, right? And I think that those ways of giving them space to say, there are so many emotions that are in us and we have a limited list of what we're allowed to do. How about we begin exploring what those other emotions are? How about you, maybe you're never sad, great. Maybe you're never afraid, great. But do you know that those emotions exist?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't know how to be afraid, if you don't know what happens when you're afraid, when maybe you face every situation that you probably should be have some apprehension towards and you're facing it full on. Maybe you're running across the street and not looking both ways. Maybe you have like you put some blinders up
right
around your toughness. Maybe you're hurting people's feelings, but you don't feel it because you don't know what it feels like to be hurt. Or maybe you've been hurt so much that you don't care about hurting others.
Right.
Or maybe you don't recognize when somebody is hurt. And so therefore, when you hurt them, you're like, that's not my fault. I didn't do that. And so I think that what we try and just help the young men know is that there's so many pieces of ourselves that we have had to tamp down.
Right.
And how do we begin to explore it? And I think that because we're having this conversation means that there's some progress happening, but there's a lot more to go. I think the documentary, The Mask You Live In, really began to unearth a lot of these concepts and topics. And I think that, you know, I met a man once who he said, I was at Costco and he was trying to sell something. I didn't want to buy it. And then he said, he tried to change the subject because I didn't want to buy this thing that he was trying to sell. He's like, so what do you do? He tried to make some small talk. What do you do? I said, well, I run a mentoring program for young men providing social emotional support. He's like, don't tell me you're going to talk about this toxic masculinity stuff. And I looked at him and I was like, okay, Shanti, we got an option here. We got an option. We can walk away. We can just walk away. I can just be like, I'm done. Thank you. Have a good day. Or I can like learn more about what he's like. Because he was bitter.
Right. About that topic. Just hit some chord on this guy.
I didn't say masculinity.
Yeah.
I said young men's mentoring program, right? So he was like, don't tell me you're going to talk about this toxic masculinity. I said, what does that mean to you? He's like, yeah, there's people who are trying to say that men can't be men. And it means that he missed it.
Mm-hmm.
It means that he heard it said once or by somebody, and he made a definition of what that means, and he missed it. Because any conscious being knows, if you just look at a couple of pieces of data or just see the world as it is, that men have a very limited range of how they can show up.
Yeah,
there's a very and if you live in a community where you can be and emote as a man in many different ways, you don't have a problem with it because you see the other side.
Mm-hmm.
You see men who can't emote, who can't show their emotions, who can't talk about how they feel, who can't be fully human because they have to fit into a box. But if you are able to recognize that there's more to you that you're able to show, you're not going to become angry about it. I think the challenge is that when people hear it, I tell them there's a hyper-masculine narrative in America of what it means. So if you don't recognize that our jails are full of men,
mm-hmm.
if people incarcerated in the United States, over 2.4 million people are incarcerated, 94% of them are men, and it's climbing.
Yeah.
So either percentage-wise, men are doing nine times more bad things than women are doing, just based on a percentage-wise, or we taught men things when they were boys, that when they become adults, it causes them to find themselves locked up.
Yeah.
We taught them not to deal with their emotions in a healthy way, so those emotions are going to get dealt with in unhealthy ways by hurting myself, hurting others, drinking alcohol, drugs, gangs, all kind of unrampant, protected other behaviors that causes them to destroy, self-destruct.
Yeah.
And so when people get upset about it, I just kind of chuckle and move on. It's like, I can't. If you heard something that didn't get said, if you made up a story about what it means, if you don't recognize that there's a challenge with how men have been socialized, then maybe you don't have a problem with it. Maybe you're okay with it.
Right.
But I know that for me and the work that I see and all over, and we can see it in middle schools and high schools, we can see it in elementary schools, we see it as young as little boys at 5 years old on the playground, this idea that the king of the hill, right? Oh, look how tough he is, right? It's cute when you're five and you are tougher than all the other little five-year-olds, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you're 15, that kind of behavior gets you arrested.
Yeah.
And so what we have done with our society is we've told our society and we've told ourselves a certain narrative, and if whatever that narrative we believe, we're going to probably teach it to our kids.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully enough, when that child becomes in an age where he's like, you know what, I don't really want to act like this or talk like this or be like this, then they can begin making good decisions. So I tell young people, when you know better, you can do better.
Yeah.
And if you don't know better, then it's going to be harder for you to do better. Mm. And I think that those are just the work, you know. So I think the work we have to do is just keep educating. We have to keep educating. We have to keep educating our students, our young people. Frederick Douglass said, it's easier to raise successful children than fix broken men.
Mm.
And that's what I believe in this work, about ever forward in education, that we got to start young, that there's some adults who are not going to change the way they are. They're going to say the things they say. They're going to talk the way they talk. But we have a younger generation that our responsibility is to help them raise up and help them become more of their true selves and be who they dream of being. And I think that it's a new world today. You know, it's a new world. It requires us to be more conscious and more thoughtful and more caring and more mindful of what we say. And because it's a new world. That's all I can say. It's a new world. So yeah, it's a great question. It's deep. It's deep, you know, so.
Totally. I mean, really, thank you. I really appreciate that. And I'm really glad you brought up that statistic of, you know, 9-10 times more men in prison than women. And because, you know, we don't ever talk about that. And when people hear that number, they kind of be like, well, men are, you know, more violent, right? Or men are more whatever. And it's like, okay, maybe to some degree, but there's some huge societal systemic problem we got going on here. And I think it comes back to this thing about how, like, as humans, like, emotions are the ways that we relate to each other. And if you take that away from someone, and you tell them they can't have it, then their humanity is going to get, you know, it's going to impact their ability to interact as humans.
Yeah.
And so we need to, you know, change that story. But I really think it's also something, you know, that's kind of hidden in your story.
Yeah.
There's something about the ability as a man
to
talk to a boy and say, you know what, it's okay. And kind of like, oh, you know, it's okay for you to feel what you're feeling. And if you don't know, then, like, that's okay. You know, like, you know, and to be that model of showing that, like, look, I'm a grown up, I'm doing fine. and I'm having feelings, and I'm telling you it works out for me. You know, like just a moment ago, both of us were tearing up about that story. And like, and we have to be able to, you know, show that's possible. And it takes that courage, you know, because you and I both had to cut through that story, you know. I'm sure, I mean, like, both of us got taught not to have those feelings and had to figure out how to do that.
Yeah.
Probably, like, still working on it.
Yeah. I think you said, I think something you said is really interesting. When you talk about if every man could talk to a younger man, I think we all need to talk to the little boy inside of us.
Yeah.
And some people have done it. Like, I've been working on me a lot over this work. And you have to. If you're going to work in mentoring young men, you have to have done some of your own work. And I think that having the voice, a conversation with my younger self and saying, you did the best you could in these situations. You did the best you could. You acted the way that people told you you were supposed to act. You behaved the way people told you you were supposed to act. And that is the part of the growth and development that we have to think about. Like, oh, man, I just did the best I could.
Yeah.
I did the best I could. And some of the things I look back, I'm like, that was not a good move. What else would I have done? I don't know what else I would have done. That's all I needed to do, right? That fight in fourth grade, I remember like it was yesterday. And I'm like, I fought because the other options didn't seem as beneficial.
Right.
Right? Like, and so I think we have to like begin as we start educating and helping each other. It's just like, how can I support you and what you're going through if you're going through something? And finding the right people. Everyone doesn't deserve to know your stuff, right?
Right.
Everyone doesn't deserve to hear your story or even everyone doesn't deserve to even know. But some people need some people's story, that things have happened to people. I think that one of my mentors says something like, what happened to you wasn't for you. It was for somebody else to learn through it.
Oof.
And if you keep it to yourself, that's fine. You have the right to do that. But maybe something that happened could help save someone else.
Wow.
And I think it's just really recognizing that, you know, that, yeah, you know, I, part of my growth and development as I'm trying to write this book, memoir, and is that, you know, my life has been a journey.
Yeah.
You know, growing up, trying to grow up really fast at 7 years old, being the man of the house. And then I was calling myself a man before I even knew what it meant to be a man. Right. And then feeling like them, so many things are missing.
Yeah.
The right amount of money, the right amount of stuff, the right amount of toys, the right amount of size house, the this, the that, like the, all the things that I was supposed to have as a man. I was just given the title without any of the backing of it, you know?
Totally.
But that's what my community, my mom needed me to be, the man of the house, so I could step up and help out and take care of my siblings. And I was like, okay, that's what I got to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I tucked away the little boy had to. I didn't get to grow up,
right?
You know,
yeah, exactly. And you're basing it off of like what you're seeing around you too.
Yeah, exactly.
So Shanti, the last question I always ask folks is, you know, given your life experience, Shanti Branch, living through all these stories that we've got a chance to hear, based on that, like, what would you invite people to pay attention to in their lives as they're trying to sort of make a better world, better selves?
I think I would ask people to pay attention to the questions you ask others and to use those questions in the right time, in the right place, and when you really mean it.
Mm-hmm.
And so how about we stop using how you doing as a greeting and begin asking people how you doing only when we're going to give them time to answer for
right.
you.
Right, yeah.
And there's so many things, but I think that's one that I hold a lot, and I do my best not to be like, hey, how you doing? And I'm like, I said it again. I do it all the time, but I try my best. I'm like that's, they're not going to answer. I think it's hard to do. So I'm asking somebody, people to do things that are really hard, right? Because we're programmed. Hey, how you doing? That's really saying hi. Because when you say how you doing, I'm not really asking you how you doing. I'm not technically, I don't even have time for you to answer how you doing. But I'm doing my best to just, hi, how are you? Even that, right? All of our greetings are all loaded because they don't give us people time to answer. And so I try and just do more of like, hello, good morning, good afternoon. Mm-hmm. And then when I have time, I'm like, how was your day? And I stop and I let them answer.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm not saying that it's easy. I'm telling you, I'm clear that it's hard because how you doing is a rolls off my tongue like it's
yeah, like we were born doing that, like right? Breathing, yeah, right? Totally.
And so, yes, I think that I mean, I say that I just want people to be more aware, right? Sometimes people need to be asked how they're doing and really give people time to answer.
Right.
And I think if we, maybe we don't stop asking the question, but we need to be start saying, hey, like, how you doing for real?
Yeah.
And
right.
Really let people have an opportunity to answer it. And that goes for our family, our friends, our kids. And sometimes when you ask people, they're going to be like, what do you mean? What do you mean? I just told you I'm doing fine, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's like, oh, because they're going to be shocked that you're actually trying to learn more, right?
Totally.
And I think it's going to be a pattern change that we need to do in our communities.
Yeah.
That can help people be seen a little bit more.
Absolutely. It's like just, yeah, just being like authentic with your curiosity, conscious of your curiosity. And like if you're trying to find out about someone, like know the power of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think yeah. one last thing I'll say, for those of you that are out there that, you know, go to our website.
I was going to say, how do we find you? Yeah, go right. ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. So, 100kmasks.com. That's where you can see the campaign. We, in fall of 2019, we'll have our app up and you can go online and make your mask or you can go and make one and send it into our office. And we'd love to have you being a part of the community to go see what people all around the world are describing and writing as their masks. And so, yeah, we're so thankful for you all. Thanks for having me.
Oh, man, it's a pleasure. I love this conversation so much. I'm so grateful to finally get you on tape, man.
Me too, man. Thank you.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you again for listening to this episode of Fractal Friends with Ashanti Branch. You can find more content, links, and resources about this episode, as well as other episodes at fractalfriends.us. And while you're there, sign up for the newsletter to get updates on new episodes and learn more about my work with Spoken Wheel. You can find out more about Ashanti Branch at everforwardclub.org. And as usual, I'll close this out with a song. The song that I want to share with you is called 100,000 Masks, and it was created by high school students in Los Angeles after they experienced Ashanti's transformative workshop. While you're listening, I invite you to take a moment to share this episode with someone. Post it on Facebook or Instagram. Spread the word. Thank you for listening to Fractal Friends, and remember, we all have a role to play in the whole. Have a nice day.
Trying to be a man, 100,000 masks, you don't know just